Hello and welcome to this episode of the 21cc podcast, brought to you by the Chartered Institute of Building. I'm Nadine Bidou, editor of CM People.
And I'm Justin Stanton, editor of CM Digital.
Today we're discussing the UK government's Warm Homes Plan and exploring the potential impact for retrofit programmes across the housing sector. We'll also bring you two important perspectives, one from a housing provider and another from a retrofit specialist. But first, let's dive into the facts behind the big announcement.
So, the Warm Homes Plan was initially announced by the government in November 2024 and then formally launched in January this year. Its aim is to upgrade the nation's homes and cut energy bills. It's expected to include as many as 5 million homes and is backed by £15 billion of investment. The plan includes three pillars. The first offers direct support for low-income families who will receive free packages of upgrades, depending on what technologies are most suitable for their homes. For example, fully funded installations of solar panels and a battery to the full average cost, currently £9,000 to £12,000. For social housing residents, this could mean upgrades to entire streets at the same time. The second pillar is for everyone and provides a government-backed zero and low-interest loans programme to support the installation of solar panels and the recently launched Future Home Standard, more of that in a minute, that means every new home will come with solar panels by default. This plan will triple the number of homes with solar panels on their rooftops by 2030, according to the government. A £7,500 universal grant for heat pumps will also be available, as well as air-to-air heat pumps that can also cool homes in the summer. The third pillar of the Warm Homes Plan provides updated protections for renters. Specifically, landlords will have a responsibility to ensure that rented homes, both private and social, are safe, warm, and affordable. By supporting landlords to make these upgrades over several years, the government estimates that around 500,000 families will be lifted out of fuel poverty by the end of the decade.
The launch of the Future Home Standard and building standards for non-domestic dwellings in late March brings us up to date and brings us changes to the building regulations.
That's right. Alongside the plans to roll out plug-in solar technology, the Future Homes Standard means changes to approved document L, Volume 1 and 2, and approved document F. Most of the changes come into force in a year's time. The changes create a new functional requirement, L3, for the provision of a system of on-site renewable electricity generation for new dwellings and buildings containing dwellings. They amend Part L of Schedule 1 to reflect the dual aims of reducing greenhouse gas emissions and conserving energy. They amend the definition of fixed building services so that it includes lifts, escalators, and moving footways in new buildings other than in individual buildings. And they introduce Regulation 40C to require provision of information to homeowners of new dwellings in an appropriate format. According to the government, the new measures could save households up to £830 a year on energy bills compared with a standard home with an EPC rating of C. These new homes are also expected to create at least 75% fewer carbon emissions than those homes built to 2013 standards. The higher standard for new homes will come into force from 2028. Both the Warm Homes Plan and the Future Home Standard have been broadly welcomed. There are, of course, plenty of devils in the detail, and some parties wish the government had gone further. But as CIOB Senior Vice President Saul Humphrey has noted, let's not let the quest for perfection be the enemy of good.
Indeed. Thanks for setting out those details, Justin. So, to help outline the challenges and opportunities for housing developers, let's hear from Thomas Fountain, Director of Asset Knowledge and Insight at Places for People.
When you reflect on the challenge that we as a sector need to embrace to deliver the Warm Homes Plan, it's important to acknowledge the diversity of the stock that actually exists in the sector. So, within P4P, our stock is diverse geographically and from an archetype basis. We've got solid wall Victorian terraces that are back to backs. We've got system built blocks, sort of mid-century, and some high rise buildings that come across a range of different ages. So fundamentally, there is no one size fits all approach as to how we're going to approach this challenge. Each of those homes needs its own technical pathway. So for example, you might need to fit EWR to some of our solid wall homes, improve the cavity or loft insulation to some of those other types of homes. But ultimately, they each need a different pathway. And from us, what we have got is an inconsistent investment approach in the past. So different homes are actually at different points in that pathway. So some of those homes on the same estates, some will still have their original double glazed windows. Others could well have new windows and upgraded insulation already. So it's about acknowledging that we almost need to know where our target state needs to be, but different homes actually need different interventions to get us there. What you see when you understand that is data becomes increasingly important, and that data insurance is a real, real focal point for us as a sector. We need high quality asset data, data sets that fundamentally we just have not routinely collected in the past. So there's a real job for us to collect that and use that to understand how we plan those programmes, but also how we actually deliver those programmes. The programme's diverse. We don't have all the data that we would like at this point, but the commitment and the ambition is absolutely huge. And what we need to do is work at both scale and pace to upgrade tens of thousands of homes on live estates coordinating multiple trades where we know there is a skill shortage that exists across the breadth of the sector. That skill shortage is immense as well. So supply chain capacity, in addition to the tradespeople to deliver EWI, plastering, heating improvements, ventilation improvements, we've also got the complexity of these works delivering those design requirements. Have we got the PAS certified installers, the retrofit assessors, the coordinators, designers? Trying to get all of that right is very, very much a balancing act that we need to work out how to manage across the breadth of that really, really diverse portfolio and the diverse geographies we work in. All of those things are challenges. The real test in delivering all of this for us is about delivering at pace without disrupting the lives of the customers, communities we serve. These programmes are more intrusive than people have previously seen. They require more planning, and customers are at risk of appointment fatigue as we have to plan all these works and really mobilise that. And sometimes we're on site for longer than maybe that we would have been in previous programmes. What we need to do is ensure that we've got clear communication, predictable appointment windows, and a shorter time of site than possible, whilst making sure that home is safe and affordable throughout all of those works. Our prime focus as a landlord is for us to address the current and emerging needs of the customers' communities we serve. And that covers a range of things that they tell us that are really, really important to them. This does go beyond the energy efficiency of the home, and there's often opportunities to tie other pieces of work together with energy efficiency, such as layout, accessibility, and as we respond to, for example, an ageing population, which can create other challenges we need to address. Particularly when we speak to our customers about energy efficiency, decarbonisation, I think what our customers tell us is that they are less concerned with insulation, low carbon heat, ventilation, climate resilience. What they tell us is they want a warm, healthy home that they can actually afford to live in. So from our perspective, it's about understanding what are our core customer drivers and what does fit for the future actually mean for them. A couple of stats have actually helped us understand some of what that means, though. When we talk about healthy home versus affordable home, 45% of our damp and mould cases are in the 15% of our homes that are Band D or below. So you're seeing some really, really clear links between the outcomes of a non-healthy home, one that's got damp and mould and Awaab's Law, some of the cases that we see, and how if we invest in energy efficiency, we've got a real opportunity to improve that. We've also got insight that we've worked with Leeds University to understand the biggest likelihood of damp and mould is actually the overall cost of heating the home, which relates to number of occupants that live in the home, the size of the home, the EPC of the home. So from our perspective, there's a range of things that have really, really pushed affordability and up to the top of our agenda in how we invest in our homes. We do know that to deliver that, we need to invest in insulation, low carbon heat, which ultimately is not a priority now. We know that gas heating is probably cheaper for customers in the very, very short term, but over a period of time, it will not be that way. So we need to respond to that emerging need. Ventilation, if we haven't got it right, customers are telling us it's less important to them, but ultimately we know it needs to be right to prevent that damp and mould. And climate resilience is something that many of our customers aren't talking about, but we are starting to see the impacts of the overheating that exists across the breadth of the portfolio. It's really, really important we get each of those elements right, and each of those things come into the planning of how we deliver our planned investment programmes. The important thing for us is about how we work in partnership with customers and communities to ensure that we deliver that in the most efficient and effective way. The key parameter that we've embedded in every single programme that we do, and we talk about affordability, which is our core customer priority, is through any of the programmes that we delivered, there can be no increase to the cost of heating hot water with our customer. And that is fundamentally responding to that absolutely prime concern that customers have got to live in a healthy home, which is less well-defined from our customer, but certainly affordable. They really, really understand, and we work with them deeply on that. It's important that we invest in the right homes and do the right things to the right homes. And just as importantly, it's when we invest, we actually get it right. So we often talk about zero regrets in the sector, about making decisions that prove to be right, that we're not regretting making at some point in the future when we look at this. But from our perspective, it's about making sure that we have actually taken the time that when we invest to absolutely get it right and make an impact to customers' communities. The onus is also on us to think about the bigger picture. So some of the financial models of retrofit have to be about what is the benefit that we as a sector are going to get from doing these works. And so by doing these works, what will the reduction in ARAB's cases be that we see experienced? What will the reduction in repairs be? What will happen to void times if you invest? And we've got evidence that proves that each of those things will move in the same way, and absolutely needs to factor into how we make financial decisions about which homes to invest in, when to invest, and how to invest. What we have seen in recent years, recent months, is a major shift in the linkages between the financial business plan, the funding that's available, and how decarbonisation is delivered. So most of our new financing, as we raise that through banks, through lenders, almost all of that finance is linked to ESG targets, which is fundamentally about acknowledging that the sector's borrowing capacity is being directly linked, and the rates that we're paying interest is directly linked to the ESG and the decarbonisation outcomes that we can actually deliver. And that really, really helps reinforce across the business the importance of the new build agenda as we provide new energy efficient homes that new customers get to live in, and also what we do from a retrofit perspective. So how do we make sure that that money is being diverted towards retrofitting our existing portfolio? What I think we have seen in recent months is some of the external finance that's available. Obviously, we've seen ECO is no longer available in the market, and there have been limited work done, certainly within P4P with that scheme. But the release of the Warm Homes Fund has really, really helped accelerate and provide some midterm security on funding that has helped contractors and the whole supply chain and providers move towards delivering more. So within P4P, we're using that to plan for the future. We're working with six other RPs as part of a consortium, which is led by P4P. And that will see us bring £32 million in over a sort of 3-year period to invest in thousands of homes. I think what you've seen at government is the scheme was oversubscribed. So there's really, really clear examples there that if you offer the right subsidy out there to the sector is willing to step up, respond to that, and try and absorb as much of that as it can into the business plan to deliver the best outcomes that the sector can for customers, for communities. Whilst this is positive, from our perspective, the reality is that the longer term certainty that we've got on some of those models is going to really, really help us do more, plan to do more. I think as we go forward, and one of the really, really key areas of innovation that is going to come even more prevalent will be the role of institutional finance. And from our perspective, we're working to understand each of the different models that are out there. You've got heat as a service models. You've got some of the models which are fundamentally around providing opportunities for customers to buy electricity at discounted rates. But each of those is about leveraging institutional finance. And what I would really hope to see is that there is still the blend there of finance to support organisations to invest in some of those things where I don't see institutional capital getting involved in, such as the fabric improvements, but certainly communal heating, solar PV. I think if we can unlock that, that will provide a real opportunity to accelerate investment through the sector. So from our perspective, the reality is the support to invest more in homes is something that we are committed to doing, but ultimately it's some tough decisions that we have to make. So the more funding that's available, the better we'll be. We spend a lot of time talking to customers about how do we invest in their homes, working with the likes of our national customer group and getting feedback from customers. The things that we've learned as we speak to customers, first and foremost, early engagement is really, really key as we deliver these programs. They are more intrusive. There is definitely the danger that I sort of touched on before around appointment fatigue. So from our perspective, how do we manage that up front and be really, really clear what the difference will be? We need to explain the how we're going to do this, but just as importantly for customers, it's about the why and what is it going to mean for them as a whole. So we do know it's going to mean your home will feel different, but we need to get some simple visuals out there as to what's changing, the expected benefits around comfort, bills, health, and also what residents need to do to support us. Because from our perspective, often if we're doing loft top-ups, we do know that, for example, we've certainly seen cases where customers have got lots of their personal belongings stored in the loft. It's their responsibility to empty that, but it is something that you need to potentially give different customers different amount of time to plan for and manage in line with themselves. So we need to engage early to support customers to do that. As we do that, we need to work out what's the level of support that we need to provide to some of our most vulnerable customers. We've definitely got cases. I was speaking to a customer last week. She's got a number of materials in her loft. She is simply not in a condition to be able to take those out of her loft herself, but she is one of the most vulnerable people. And what I wouldn't want is for her to be excluded from a program because she can't do it. So for us, it's about how do we work in partnership with our repairs team, with the supply chain, to support that customer to do that so that we can deliver those works that are really, really urgently needed. There are those examples, and it's about some of the technologies that go into the home. We need to spend more time than we would imagine actually explaining to customers and re-explaining how to use them. And what we see is customers often, there's a range of things that they understand that they're getting, and they understand when they get a new boiler that it'll run as it used to and it'll be the same, and ultimately, but your controls will look a bit different. Replacing that for an air source heat pump or installing new ventilation when we've made the building more airtight, if you don't use the air source heat pump almost as you've been described to, or use the ventilation, you turn it off because you think you're saving electricity, we know the negative impacts that will have to the affordability and to the performance of the home. But ultimately, it's something that we have to keep working with customers on. So from our perspective, how do we do that? How do we educate people on that? How do we re-educate people on that? And then how do we make sure that they are lessons that are maintained across the duration of the asset life cycle? Because I think we spend quite a lot of time working with customers, providing leaflets, videos, a whole range of media to explain to customers how to use it. The one thing, for example, that I think this whole sector needs to get better at, what about when the home is next empty? What about when that customer's moved on? Are we giving that same level of education to the next customer moving in to ensure that they can actually use that home in the way it was intended? And often my experience is that the answer is no. So we need to work out how to step through that journey a little bit sort of more intelligently as a client, as a landlord, and support those customers. For us, some of this is about data is power as well. And we have got smart monitoring devices that we fit in our homes with customer permission. What they do when the home is actually performing is give us that option. How is the home performing? What did we expect it to be? What is the real performance like? Is performance matching expectations? And as and where it's not, it's about what is our then process to go in and speak to those customers and understand, is that because fundamentally the tech or the equipment or the insulation isn't working as performing, or is that because there is some education or some support we can give to customers so they can use their home sort of more efficiently, more effectively. Ultimately, I think our biggest conclusion on ensuring that they work for residents is about how do we actually continually engage with residents on this, and how do we ensure that the whole process is resident focused? Because from our perspective, if it isn't, we know that there are lessons that we'll have to learn, which ultimately they won't help us, and certainly they don't help the customer. With the scale that the sector needs to work at, I think it's inevitable that the supply chain will need to grow. From our perspective, we know there are some contractors who have been operating the sector who are more mature than others. There's a skill set that is needed. And ultimately, what we need to work out is how to expand that skill set, how to expand the main contractor and the SME market to ensure that we can get delivery value across that supply chain. The P4P portfolio, if I reflect on that for a moment, is really, really diverse. And we have got stock across the breadth of the UK. We've got a range of different archetypes with different requirements and different specialist contractors that we're going to need. And in terms of those homes and the geography, it's probably likely that we're going to need a mixed approach to procurement to ensure that we're delivering value and to ensure that we've got it separated in a way that offers value for the contractor and keeps it efficient and effective for those SMEs. So from our perspective, there is a need to reflect on how do we deliver that? But I think the ultimate thing for us is how does every organisation pick supply chain partners who will fit within their culture and fit within the culture they expect those contractors to provide to their residents? The best outcomes that we've seen as a provider is those contractors that have got some really, really, really shared commitments to the customer-focused outcomes. So from our perspective, how do we deliver the best service we can to customers? How do we do it in a way that we know makes the biggest impact to customers, particularly from an affordability perspective and from a simplicity actually getting those works delivered efficiently and effectively? How do we use that culture of learning and innovation? So what are the things that we're willing to take from the contractors, and what are they willing to take from us about what we're doing now, and what should we be doing in future to build on that? What's the investment in the skill sets? So we at P4P have recently opened, sort of in the last 18 months, PFP Thrive, which is a training academy, which is about training skill sets, technical skill sets, and retrofit assessor skill sets across the sector. How do we make sure that everybody is committed to growing those, so the sector is growing its own, and that skill set is in just being, we're building that capacity, we're baking that into what we're doing as part of the contractors, upskilling, focusing on apprenticeships, local recruitment, and almost how do we measure that? Areas of development, I would say, how do we encourage that sharing across the supply chain is one of those things that I would really, really like the sector to think about just a little bit more. Particularly when we're working with what will likely be multiple contractors in multiple locations. For me, what I'd love to be able to understand is if you're working on the same types of homes in the same types of areas, how do we start to share some of that design work that goes in so that we're learning the lessons from different contractors and ultimately providing an opportunity for the whole sector to learn from each other and be more efficient and effective as a whole rather than intuitively. Because some of these contractors are working across multiple different partners, the opportunity for that sharing between contractors and compliance and clients must be massive to deliver the outcomes that we need. There's a number of ingredients which will make a partnership successful between the whole of the supply chain as we deliver these programmes. Obviously, the opportunity to enter into long-term contracts gives some real opportunity to work on these and embed them over a period of time. When we set these contracts out, we've definitely seen shared objectives, transparent KPIs at the front end, focused on costs, quality, safety, satisfaction, are a real key fundamental to getting those embedded so that we can ensure that there's those shared objectives everyone's committed to at the outset. How you set that culture as to get it right first time and have those real clear mobilisation meetings at the outset is really, really important for us. How do we get that right? Interestingly for us, it's about a shared understanding of the risks that exist in these programmes. And we know that there is a range of diversity in the sector. There's a range of data that we may or may not have. How do we react when we look into that data, understand it? And what does the live risk register look like? And how is that managed collectively? How do we share that risk? How do we understand it? How do we jointly manage that risk? Because we know that there will be changes to programmes, but ultimately there has to be a shared understanding that everyone's accountable for working collaboratively to address that risk. That area that we touched on earlier, data is still a challenge in this area. There's a lot of data that we haven't collected routinely in the past. We're going to need to collect it as we go through these programmes so that we're fit for the future and we're ready to go through the next stages of whatever that looks like. Information management, making sure that we've got some really clear systems set up so that we can take that information and store it in a way that, number one, it can be used really clearly and collaboratively within the project. Number two, it comes back into our data infrastructure so that we can use it for future investment. And I would absolutely step into that mutual investment in people. And for me, the training and the skill set challenge that we acknowledge exists, I think, across the whole of the construction sector, particularly the retrofit sector, I'd absolutely be wanting every member of that partnership to be working collaboratively and almost supporting each other to develop people, develop skill sets, and ensure that overall the whole sector capacity is getting bigger, more diverse, and better equipped to deal with the future challenge that lies ahead. In 5 years' time, whether we're assessing whether we've been a success in what we've done, I really, really want to be able to look and understand and look at some of the metrics of what we've achieved and know that we've made a difference. Know that we've made measurable differences to the number of customers that are in fuel poverty across the customers' communities we serve. Looking at the number of homes that are below EPC and knowing that that has dropped significantly and more people can live in that affordable warmth. Looking at the supply chain, knowing that we have developed approaches that exist in the sector which provide a lot more certainty around what will those works cost and exactly what needs to happen so that we can actually deliver. And we know that we are adding value and taking some of that waste that currently exists in the sector and building that out, and knowing for me that that transition to clean heat is almost underway. So we're starting to see that transition. I think we're starting to see it. It's been as slow as we like. So for me, it's about what are those really, really clear measurable objectives? How can we prove it? And I think we should be able to get to that through some form of, there'll be a range of KPI frameworks that will enable you to say, yeah, we started here and we've got to here and we know that we're on a journey. I think the two key things for me is I'd want to know what that was and I'd want to be able to report that. The biggest one for me is if we were to ask the customers where we've done work, would they stand there and say, yes, you've made a difference to my home, you've made a difference to my life and my life is better and I'm living in a healthier home as a result of what you've done. And I think in 5 years' time, we should be looking back with 5 years' worth of data. And I would like to think that our approach will be getting better and better, and a higher proportion of people are saying, yes, you're doing that work, you're delivering it, you're delivering those outcomes we spoke about, but the process was more effortless for me as a customer. You're able to deliver it quicker, more efficiently, more effectively. And as a result, what we've got is a much clearer plan as to what the next 5 years looks like. Because the reality is, I don't think this is a five-year plan. So if in 5 years we're sat here saying, we can prove we've delivered the outcomes we set out to, we can prove customers are confirming that it's made a difference to their home, and we've taken all those lessons and they're embedded into our next year, five-year piece of planning, that for me would absolutely feel like success.
Thanks so much, Thomas. Up next is Dan German, Managing Director at Durkan Regen, sharing his take on the pressures and prospects for contractors.
So the Warm Homes Plan is all about investing in a major shift in how the UK approaches domestic energy efficiency, fuel poverty, and creating jobs in homegrown renewable energy. It's backed by around $15 billion in funding and is ultimately about cutting energy bills and improving home comfort. Up to 5 million homes are set to be upgraded, with 1 million families lifted out of fuel poverty. So the plan includes various energy saving upgrades such as solar panels, batteries and heat pumps, alongside the boiler upgrade scheme, as well as that encompassing more traditional retrofit measures such as EWI, glazing, ventilation upgrades. It is important to realise that to achieve warm homes, each property can be at a different stage in measures towards that, and we need different installs to upgrade. This makes accurate stock assessment and planning more important than ever, enabling efficiency through installation programmes, better value, better quality and less resident disruption. Of course, all of this requires a retrofit sector with the right knowledge and skills to respond. And the government has set aside £21 million for a heat training grant and £8 million for the Warm Home Skills Programme. So is the industry ready right now? Probably not in its entirety, which is exactly why the Warm Homes Task Force has been created, with a focus on growing the necessary skills from retrofit coordinators to qualified installers, so that we are ready to deliver on the Warm Homes Plan and retrofit the huge range and age of homes that need work. At Durkan Regen, we're a family-owned business backed by over 50 years' experience of working with local authorities and housing providers across London and the South East. That gives us both the knowledge and agility to respond to the challenge ahead, with strong capability across the full range of regeneration and retrofit services, and a real focus on making homes fit for the future. Importantly, we're a PAS 2030 accredited installer. We have extensive long-term supply chain relationships, and we also have strategic partnerships with PAS 2035 accredited partners. So therefore, we can offer a holistic turnkey approach from stock assessment, coordination, design through to installation. We've also worked on diverse stock portfolios from single Victorian houses to high-rise tower blocks. Historically, a lack of funding has meant that vital works have potentially been overlooked for significant periods of time. Where funding has been available, this has often been in silos, creating a fragmented approach to retrofit as opposed to a whole house methodology. This has also fed into inconsistent levels of remediation being completed across the sector, meaning we're having to tailor our approach to each individual property as opposed to applying blanket treatments. Inconsistency in remediation also translates into inconsistency in the data we have on these works, which makes it hard to target what action is needed and where. These issues are also compounded by a general skills shortage in the sector, and there's a real need for both upskilling and bringing new people into the sector to meet a demand that will only continue to grow. And finally, communicating the need, case, and tangible benefits of remediation works to residents can be challenging. People are often nervous of work taking place within their home, so educating them on exactly what will be done, when and how, and critically why, and the benefits it brings is key to building trust and successful tenant relationships. At Durkan Regen, we're committed to doing all we can to understand, explore and really respond to resident perspectives on retrofit and regeneration, and to facilitate a positive path forward. So there certainly is a skills shortage in the sector, and I think there needs to be a collective effort to tackle it. That goes from government funding and support, such as the Warm Homes Plan, to contractors taking the initiative and nurturing future talent. And at Durkan Regen, our focus is on continuing to grow that skills pipeline. So we sit on the interim board for the GLA's Inclusive Talent Strategy, And we're also working closely with DESNZ's Warm Homes Work Task Force, who have been really impressed with our work linking skills to long-term social value and employment prospects. This includes a focus on getting the basics right, meaning that any new skills we bring in are based on a strong foundation. The Thomas mentioned Places for People's training programme, Thrive, and on the ground, we adopt a similar approach through a successful retrofit skills bootcamp programme, which moves away from apprenticeship only and instead centres on flexible, adaptable and rapid pathways into entry-level jobs. And we think this is particularly key at the moment. This is in partnership with L&Q, our supply chain partners and the skills centres, where trainees receive 12 months of wraparound support, including mentoring, financial guidance and housing advice. The success of the programme has been recognised by the GLA, and some of the boot camps include tailored programmes in high demand areas such as wall insulation, roofing, cladding and fire protection. It's been a real success to date. We've had over 18,000 hours across 6 boot camps, 45 work placements and 13 job outcomes. If we're going to make large-scale housing upgrades more efficient, we need to focus on integrated practices and a holistic approach to asset regeneration. We have adopted innovative construction methods, including ground source heat pumps and internal wall insulation systems. However, it is more accurate planning as opposed to specific construction that drives better efficiency. The amount of times we see inefficiency in planned maintenance programs due to a number of challenges, from silo funding to inaccurate stock data and completing priorities. It's not actually uncommon to visit the same property 5 times. So holistic planning is at the heart of driving efficiency, as well as the right procurement route and early partner engagement. Silo funding is also a challenge. Housing providers are bidding for a range of funds and it's all happening at different times. This can drive misaligned priorities and a fragmented approach to regeneration. Also, the use of AI is increasingly key. We're using digital tools to ensure build quality, manage works in occupied properties, and to improve resident experience during construction. In 2025, we achieved over 98% resident satisfaction across our projects. Our digital infrastructure has also been designed to support high-risk buildings through the Building Safety Regulator's processes and also to prepare for AWBS law, where we've developed a number of early warning systems to allow providers to get ahead of the challenge. But beyond innovative construction and the use of technology is the overriding need to take a whole house approach. The key ingredient is early engagement, always, and that starts with the right procurement route. Also, experience, the use of long-standing organisations with extensive experience, the ability to carry out extensive and often intrusive regeneration activities across large portfolios of occupied properties is a unique skill set that comes from decades of experience. We are working in people's homes, and those on the front line at Durkan Regen appreciate that. You have to treat these homes as you would expect yours to be treated. The ability to complete construction tasks is only half the process. Our senior team at Durkan Regen have over 150 years combined experience in doing this. However, with all that aside, we still see price being evaluated in the wrong way, with the highest mark persistently awarded to the lowest cost. We also see a large number of new contractors emerging. And despite years of proven successful long-term partnerships that are procured in the right way, there are still a remarkable number of clients that procure with a race to the bottom. As I mentioned before, if you procure a partner that can holistically plan across a long-term programme, you will save significantly more in efficiency and added value than by simply appointing the cheapest bid stage. Our best partnerships are the ones where we have the flexibility and the strength of relationship to be able to take a longer term, more holistic approach to regeneration. These always generate the best quality, the best resident engagement, the most social value, and drive the best value for money. Ultimately, success of the Warm Homes Plan and the housing sector more broadly has to be measured by homes themselves and the people that live in them. So we want people to say we have made a marked difference to their lives. There can be a tendency in this sector to become too detached and talk about assets and end users, but the reality is these are homes and lives that we are responsible for. So success for me is therefore more homes are safe, warm and fit for the future, less people in fuel poverty, and a skills pipeline in our sector that can ensure this will continue long into the future. And of course, stronger, more collaborative partnerships between providers and contractors, with a genuine understanding of stock condition at their heart and a clear plan beyond that 5 or 10 year mark, allowing the alignment of mutual cultures between housing providers and contractor partners. Given the challenges in the sector across regeneration and provision of new homes, in 5 years' time, it will be great to see more emerging skills, new trainees, new apprentices, next generation leaders, and a continuation of long-standing, agile, client-focused organisations like Dirk and Regen working in partnership with housing providers for many years to come.
Thank you, Dan, for sharing your insights. Now, that's all from us for this episode. If you would like to share your feedback on the podcast, you can email us at 21cc@atompublishing.co.uk. And if you're on social media, please use the hashtag 21cc to let us know what you think. Thanks for listening.